This is Mobilized. I'm Rob Moyer, Executive Director of the Ocean River Institute. With me today is Thomas Lindsay, Senior Legal Counsel for the Center for Democratic and Environmental Rights. Hello, Tom.
Hey, Rob. Thanks. Good to be back with you and Mobilized today.
We're talking about giving legal rights to nature. You've referred to environmental activism as a giant hamster wheel. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so in some ways, we all live in a giant myth in the United States, which is this concept that majority rules. And so when a community is subject to some kind of project that they don't want, like a toxic waste incinerator or a landfill or hydrofracking for natural gas or a factory hog farm comes into their community, they think that it matters that a majority of people within their community doesn't want the project. But in reality, under our system of law that we have, it doesn't matter that a majority of people don't want the project in their own community, because local democracy really doesn't exist in the United States. What happens is those people who care about that project coming in and want to stop it are basically channeled into something that we refer to as the environmental regulatory system, in which the rules under which that project will be allowed in that community have been written previously by some of the largest corporations in the United States, which control the writing of those regulations. So even though a majority of people in a community may not want a particular project, it couldn't matter less to the system, because the system sends them through this meat grinder, which has essentially been created by the corporations in that particular industry who want to put that project into that community in the first place. And we had to learn that the hard way. I did conventional environmental law for about a decade, representing these communities. And what happens is the community says, we don't want it. They then get sent into this regulatory system, and environmental lawyers like me were responsible for trying to find places in that regulatory system that would allow the community to actually stop the project. And as you can imagine, when the corporations are the ones that are writing the regulations in the first place, the last thing they're going to do is actually provide something in those regulations for a community to use to defeat their projects. Because after all, if you were writing the master plan yourself, you certainly wouldn't put anything into that master plan that allows people to stop what you're trying to do. And so when we use the word hamster wheel, to get back to your specific question, it's about creating work for communities to go through that regulatory process, whereby on the other end, they rarely stop the projects that they're trying to stop through that regulatory system. And our experience, at least, was going in front of judges and saying, you know, Your Honor, there is a signature missing from a permit application, or a certain bond didn't get posted, or a water study hadn't been done, something required by the regulations. And sometimes we would win those individual battles, but then the company would simply come back, rewrite their permit application, and proceed with the project anyway. In fact, things got so bad in this hamster wheel of activism that we experienced that I had the lawyers for some of the largest corporations in the world coming up to me after we had won a specific case, a delay of some sort, and actually thanked me for finding those gaps, omissions, and deficiencies within their own permit application so that the law firm could go back and actually charge more hours to the corporation to fill in those gaps, omissions, and deficiencies. So when we say hamster wheel, it's kind of like we have this understanding that we live in a democracy, or belief that we live in a democracy, where it matters what a majority of people actually think in a particular community, but in reality, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at all, because we are so obedient to a regulatory system that's been written by the very corporations that ostensibly that regulatory system is supposed to regulate. And so kind of makes you question our entire mode of organizing and activism, which is basically pressure politics, trying to get agency regulators to do something, or trying to get our elected representatives to do something. We don't even think about ourselves anymore as law drafters or adopters or enforcers. We're basically on the outside looking in. We're always on the defense, and we're always begging and pleading our government to function. And we're using phrases like the regulatory system is broken, when in reality, the regulatory system may be working just as it was intended to work, which is in essence to give us work to do, but insulate us from the very corporation that's attempting to put something into our community to use it for that project. So that's kind of the hamster wheel analogy that we use.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's we think the environmental regulations work one way and they work a different way, and all the emphasis is on the property owners, and so can't people in their own communities adopt laws that they need to protect themselves in nature?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'm due to speak at the Bowling Green State University in a couple of weeks, which is right in the backyard of the East Palestine community that suffered that huge train accident where they were burning vinyl chloride and the huge accident. And so the community there has done everything that communities do, which is file a class action lawsuit and go through the regulatory process and try to think about ways to stop it from happening the next time. But one of the best ways to stop it from happening the next time is to actually stop it from happening the next time by passing a local law, for example, that would require the railroad corporation to disclose hazardous or toxic materials that are coming through the community, or to ban certain trains from coming through the community that have toxic waste or hazardous waste on them. The problem is when you move into the lawmaking, what you find is that your lawmaking at the community level is constrained by various forces that stop you from passing those laws. And in the case of the railroad corporations, over 100 years ago, laws went into place to insulate railroad corporations from communities, to preempt them from actually passing any kind of local laws that deal with disclosure or, God forbid, deal with bans of hazardous or toxic waste coming through the community. And so what you find is that the structure itself has been established to divest us of any democratic authority at the local level to actually deal with those issues. And it's not just railroads, factory hog farms. Most state legislatures have put in place laws that preempt or override community laws that try to make factory hog farms, you know, these 5,000, 10,000 head, 50,000 head hog factory farms, to either ban them or make them more palatable to the community. That those laws have been essentially preempted by state legislatures who are in turn controlled by some of the biggest corporations in those particular industries. Extraction of natural gas, same thing. Most states have oil and gas acts in place, which override community passage of local laws that regulate or control extraction of minerals or natural gas. In Florida recently, Governor DeSantis signed a bunch of preemptive laws, which stopped communities from passing laws regulating use of styrofoam, use of coral reef friendly sunblock. Banned communities that attempted to require coral friendly sunblock. There's communities there that have tried to stop major cruise ship operations that are damaging the ocean and reefs. Those have been overridden by the state legislature. So the concept here is that we think that we live in a democracy, but we only have the luxury of thinking that until we try to use it. And when we try to actually use it, we find that there's a structure of law in place that actually is anti-democratic, that's been put in place by some of the major corporations working tandem with state legislatures and sometimes even the federal government to put in place a system that systematically divests us from being able to use a democratic system to actually protect ourselves from harmful activities coming into the community. And that's completely the opposite of the way that we're raised. It's completely the opposite of the way that we are taught democracy functions, you know, by the people, for the people, of the people, that kind of stuff. It's completely opposite to it. It's all camouflaged. It's all hard to see. And the only time you can actually see it is when you try to use it. And when you try to use it and you run into these hurdles, you find out that it's not just your particular issue that you've been siloed into, that it's agriculture, it's transportation, it's the types of issues around railroad corporations, for example, or waste disposal and waste management. All these big ticket items, these huge industries, are too big to be subject to democracy. Kind of like too big to fail, too big to be subjected to democracy. So when you attempt to start changing them, say we don't want factory farms, we want family farms, we're going to pass laws that actually require family farms here and ban factory farms. What you find is that you run into this structure of law, which is not democratic at all, and in which basically says that we don't care that a majority of people in the community don't want this particular project. And so people may think, you know, we can do this and we can do that. And that's basically the gasoline that American democracy runs on, but it really doesn't exist. It's not there. And when people try to use it, they can't get to it. They can't actually use it. And that was our experience over about a decade of doing kind of this conventional, traditional lawmaking stuff. And it also says, in a way, that what we've been doing for the past 40 years along activist circles, it's been ineffective for a reason. You know, things are worse now, 40 years after the major environmental laws were passed, than they are today, from a climate perspective, from almost any perspective that you can think of, major environmental statistic-wise. And there's a reason for that. It's not that enough of us haven't been doing it. It's not that enough money hasn't gone into it. Billions of dollars go into environmental protection each year. It's just that the fact is we're working within a structure or a system that does not recognize our authority at the community level to actually stop those things that are harming us at that level.
So there's whole different levels of power. And so it seems that you have your best impact if you go in at the municipal level.
Yeah, I think that's our only choice at this point. Not because it's the best choice, because obviously you want to be working at the state, federal, or international level, because those are higher, but because they're the only governments that we can actually begin to reprogram. So in New England, for example, in Vermont and Massachusetts and New Hampshire, those places, you can put something on the ballot with 10 signatures at a town meeting, at your local government level. The reason why environmental activists generally have steered clear of the municipal level, you know, cities, towns, villages, county level, is because they say, why bother when we can do activism at the state, federal, or international level? That's been the model. And working at the local level has its problems because you're at the smallest unit of government, which essentially can be overturned by other units of government higher up. But they're all we have. And people that think that we can continue to do environmental activism the same way that we've done it, and in fact, it extends beyond environmental activism, like housing activism, on you know, rent control, for example. State legislatures have overturned the ability of communities to pass rent control laws, living wage laws. These municipalities that want to pass increases to the minimum wage and pass living wage laws. So those living wage laws have been preempted by state legislatures and by corporations that hold influence there. So it's not just environmental, it's social justice, it's all kinds of activism in that progressive arena. But coming at it from that vantage point, to me, the only place where it makes a difference anymore is at the local level. But we actually have to change the structure, and we have to understand where the structure comes from. It's the power of preemption, corporate rights, all the stuff that we're talking about today, it's all derived from our constitutional structure, which actually recognizes and has been interpreted to recognize some of those powers that are then elevated above our democratic majority power at the local level to actually change something. So the biggest problem here is that we have this myth operating that we have a democracy. Democracy is usually translated into can you vote? You know, if we can vote, we have a democracy. But democracy is about much more than that. It's not just voting to who we want to represent us. It's actually about formulating the kind of world we want to live in and having the tools to actually get to that place. So the myth in the United States is that we have that. The problem is when you try to use it, you find out that we don't.
So, what would a real democracy look like?
I think a real democracy is when people in a community can stop a pipeline, a fossil fuel pipeline from crossing through their municipality, or a community that can adopt a law mandating that only family farmers operate agricultural facilities, not large corporations, not factory farms in that community. It's a community in which that can pass rent control laws, a community that can pass police ombudsman laws to make sure that the police force is actually operating to respect civil rights within the community. Freeing this municipal level so that communities have the ability to democratically determine their own futures. I think that's what this looks like. Emissions, fossil fuel pipelines. We worked on an ordinance a little while ago for New York City that would have banned financing from finance companies to finance new fossil fuel infrastructure. The question is, when are we going to radicalize in this direction? When are we going to understand that community, local self-government might be one of the most powerful tools to bring forth a sustainable future for ourselves? That the state and federal government is so wrapped up in corporate control that basically they operate as corporations themselves. That state legislatures are basically boards of directors for state corporations that have to respond to private corporations that want certain things to happen within their state. Do we think as individuals that we have the same access to state legislatures or the federal government as the largest corporations do? Of course not. We don't. And it's a fantasy to think that we can participate meaningfully in those levels anymore, that we really need to kind of make our own destiny at the local level. And then instead of asking, what can we get from those other levels, which has been the history of our activism for the past 40 years, what can we get? Instead of asking, what do we need and what do we want? And in a time period in which we're facing these cataclysmic, apocalyptic projections about climate change, about poisoning of the atmosphere with the immense amounts of toxic chemicals that we emit into the atmosphere each year. So, kind of a global poisoning thing that's happening. In addition to the fact that 80% of the population now lives within a couple miles of a Superfund site. I mean, we are actively killing ourselves off by our activities. We need to be more than 4-year-olds just playing with things, seeing when they break. And instead, begin to move into this different era of sustainability that only happens if we treat it as a democratic issue as well as an environmental and sustainable one.
Yeah, it's amazing what can be done at the local level. We're looking at, a new bottle bill because bottle recycling has gone from 70% down to 35%. And so I think if they just double the deposit and include lots of nips and other plastic containers, that will increase participation. And it just isn't right to charge people more for punishing that. You've got to explain what the money's going for. And so I'm putting into the bill that all this money that isn't given back to for deposits will go to Department of Environmental Protection to buy or give grants for the purchase of reverse vending machines that they will locate in schools and community centers. And that way, and so Cambridge is thinking of trying this out as a pilot where the sports teams can have a Saturday be their money on the bottles recycling, and that gets people putting the bottles into their cars and gets the kids unloading the bottles from cars, and it just turns it around. And but you have to have an example in the municipal level, because this bill is being written by the biggest environmental group in Massachusetts, and they don't want to hear about these other things. They just know the laws and want to cramp it down. And so when I talked to one of the authors who's they're writing it for, she just tossed it out the window. But a municipality is taking an action, you can really.
I mean, as harsh as it sounds, we're to a point where I see the major environmental organizations as big a problem as the major corporations, extractive corporations in the United States. At least in our experience, they take people into that regulatory process. That's how they see the world. And they take them into that regulatory process as much as the major corporations do in terms of steering people into that place where they can't make a difference. So cutting edge stuff, Concord, Massachusetts, a number of years ago banned single-use plastic receptacles. And faced a challenge. The Attorney General's office came in and validated the bylaw that was passed there. But to me, it's those types of things that are ground change, shift the entire paradigm, begin to shift the groundwork about what if communities had that kind of power. Had that kind of power to ban pipelines and ban single-use plastic receptacles, ban vinyl chloride from being used, banned financial co companies from continuing to finance climate change accelerating projects. Climate change right to climate laws at the local level. What if individuals have a right to climate that they can enforce in court? There's so much game-changing stuff that we've been trying to get done at the state and federal level for the past 40 years that we haven't been able to do. Why not localize it? Bring it to the local level and begin to localize those laws because nothing else is working. And it's odd that, we pick one thread, like a bottle bill or, a law passed by a municipality, and it connects to everything. And the everything is that when you start pulling those strings, what you find is that the power structure in the US is not on our side. The power structure is about extraction and use and resource sacrifice zones and all these things. But the fact is that the number one value that drives the United States is the endless production of more stuff. That it's possible to have endless economic growth. That's kind of like the cultural value thing that drives everything. And the corporations are in that, they're benefiting from that, but they also want to cultivate and nurture that understanding that endless economic growth is possible. So we have this death machine that's been built. It's like we have a constitution written from the 1780s that buys into kind of that endless economic growth is possible scenario. We have corporations that benefit from that, and all of that structure is elevated above the rights of communities to actually exercise democratic authority. And so we're stuck in that big structural system that has to change. It's not enough to do pressure politics at this point. We have to begin to assert local authority on its own and draw the challenge to that in enough places so that people can begin to understand that we don't live in a democracy, that we live in something much different.
Wow. So what will it take to create that system in the US?
So I think it will take enough people understanding how the system actually functions and rejecting this concept that we live in a democratic system. And then using that, you need to take these frontline communities, and there are thousands of them, thousands of them dealing with a new factory hog farm coming in, or a toxic waste incinerator, or moving into social justice issues, rent control and all these other things that we've been talking about today. And you need those groups to say, we are not going to be scripted into a system in which the script has been written before we got there. In other words, we're not going to fight these projects anymore in the regulatory system, knowing that they're losers in that system. We're going to do it on our own. We're going to actually use our own inherent municipal democratic governing authority to actually write laws. We need to see ourselves in a different way. Right now, we see ourselves on the outside trying to influence a system. We need to see ourselves as law drafters, law adopters, law enforcers. We need to see ourselves in a completely different fashion, and that we need a revolution of sorts. We need a revolution from the ground up that actually says these issues are so important that we're not going to allow ourselves to be ground down by this regulatory system that's been created for us to run around like hamsters on a wheel. Instead, we're going to seize control. We're going to rewire or hotwire the municipal form of government to actually be that vehicle towards sustainability. And that takes a different brand of organizing, a different brand of activism, folks that are not willing to sit back and just wait for this regulatory structure to roll over them, but instead move forward to do things like ban factory farms in a community, ban single-use plastics. Ban, styrofoam, ban, and then move into that challenge place where you're directly confronting the corporations that are benefiting from the current system and confronting and running up against those communities that want a different kind of future.
Brilliant. How can people learn more about your work?
Yeah, so they can go to our website, the Center for Environmental Rights.org. So our organization is the Center for Democratic and Environmental Rights, and we assist communities to do this kind of direct democratic control, mostly in environmental circles, but we also work on other social justice circles as well. But it really takes a different kind of community. It takes activists who are willing to do something different, and it takes a willingness to run up directly against the system that we have to try to challenge it.
Yeah, I recommend people check out your website, and there's a lot of resources there to learn more about actions and stuff. Thomas Lindsay, a senior legal counsel for Center of Democratic and Environmental Rights, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks to you and Mobilize for having us back.
I'm Rob Moyer of the Ocean River Institute. Thank you for listening. Please take care of yourself, and then take some care of yourself.